back to the Jeff Horst Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line, if you want to engage with the program, 251-343-0106. That's how you interact with the program. So it'll come about an hour from now from P2 Public Affairs, our Tuesday regular, Will Hampson. So please make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now from Jefferson County, State Representative Danny Garrett. You may know him. He's the chairman of the Education Trust Fund, the Alabama House of Representatives. Representative, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, trying to deal with a summer cold like everybody else. But other than that, having a good summer.
Yeah, these changes in the atmosphere can that will strike in any moment. So hopefully you get better. How's the offseason been for you?
It's been busy. We've had a lot of meetings, a lot of conferences. I'm already having meetings about the upcoming budget. So a lot of discussions in preparation for that. Discussions with our new administration coming in and trying to, you know, get the lay of the land. So this will be the first time I've gone through a wholesale administration change. So I'm trying to get in front of as many issues as I can.
We'll talk about the budget a little bit, if you would. You know, we keep hearing maybe there's a slowdown in store. Obviously, there was a lot of federal money kind of sloshing through the system. And, you know, the day's going to come when, you know, maybe the wish lists don't necessarily all get granted. Where are we kind of on that continuum?
I think the best way to look at the budget is if you look at the amount of supplemental budget, because when you look at the money that comes in that's earmarked that goes to the various education institutions, you look at what we put in reserves, you look at what we put into advancement technology, what's left over is the supplemental appropriation. You know, at the height of COVID money coming in, we had $2.8 billion in supplemental. That was way off the chart. But about 3 years ago, the supplemental was $600 million. And again, this represents what's money that's left over after you've done everything you have to do statutorily to comply with the law. The $600 million, then it went to $500 million. Last year was $419 million. I think this year's supplemental will be closer to $200 million. So what that tells you is that the revenues have stabled off like we expected. We put some measures in to limit our budget growth, but I think that supplemental picture tells you that we're still in good financial shape. We'll still have some funds left over, but we're back to kind of a more normal situation.
Well, a new administration, and the governor will submit budgets, and do you expect many changes in this in the overall kind of outlook process? Does it seem like, there will be changes from Ivy to Tuberville for sure, but we haven't really, I don't get a sense that this is really kind of something they really, really want to radically change.
The budgets. Well, I think they're going to come in with a lot of ideas about how we can make government more efficient, about different things they want to do with the with their priorities, and I look forward to those conversations. So I don't think it will be just business as usual. I expect there'll be some new ideas and a lot of discussion. So I look forward to having those. This is again the first year of this administration change. So we'll have a budget come to us before we have to have a budget from the governor on the second day of session. So we'll have to step through how this is going to navigate, how this change will happen, but I don't expect it with business as usual.
Well, let's talk about some other things kind of going on. There's actually a lot going on in the state political world with you guys out of session. I guess first, there's sort of a populist sentiment out there, and I'm sure you're aware of it up in your locality. You're talking about data centers and flock cameras, and we got solar farms. It seems it seemed to be really getting people engaged, and sort of got them very engaged on the tail end of the primary cycle, and I think had an impact on maybe a race or two. But it seems like kind of talking to some of your colleagues, they're looking at doing some things, be it data centers or flock cameras for this upcoming session.
Well, I think we'll have a lot of discussions. I think we've got a pragmatic, what's workable. AI is the genie out of the bottle. You can't put it back in. we have to figure out how to navigate that world. And I think what the sense I get is that we'll have discussions and we'll probably find some ground that a middle ground that I think is practical and in both of those areas. So I think the idea that we would just go all in with no restrictions or that we would have none of that to me is not realistic, but I think we will have those discussions.
Well, I think on the data center question, and the county commissioners have just, you know, commission associations push back a little, trying to get a one size fits all is something that they don't seem to be really too keen on, but maybe at a minimum, there could be some guardrails or at least some requirements that, you know, yes, this is private property and we had to try to maintain some semblance of private property rights. I get that.
I think all those are fair game. But I think at the end of the day, with the AI that's out there in the world, where do we want that data stored? I don't want it stored in China. But I don't want to, you know, again, infringe upon property rights either. I think there's a reasonable answer here. Right now, people are just kind of, I think, going to extremes. But we'll figure out, I think, what makes sense and what's fair and reasonable. Of course, I think we just have to have those discussions.
The other one, the flock cameras, and Sarah Orr was very, I guess, early on this, and you know, 4 or 5 years ago, but that maybe it wasn't such an issue back then. Now you're starting to see more and more of these cameras in communities, and especially in rural places. And you know, there's a constitutional discussion that's going on, but there's also this discussion: is this really the way we want government to go down this path? And a lot of people are raising objections. What's your take on that?
I think we have to make a distinction between surveillance and security, and I think that's the discussion we have to have. I think certainly there's a place for flock cameras that have been helpful with law enforcement and solving crimes, and I know it's been very important. At the same time, I think Senator Orr raised some great points, and I don't think we want a society that's where the government is surveying every, you know, intensive surveillance on everyone. But you know, you hear the anecdotal things. But my wife and I were talking the other day about a little thing you can do on your phone and just ask your phone to describe you to somebody who doesn't know you. And they're doing that based upon, I guess, listening to what we say. You know, we were having a conversation about a trip we were about to take, and within 10 minutes, we were getting ads for where we were talking about going. So I think there's a lot of things like that are concerning. We have to manage those things as well. But we can't, I think, just not equip our law enforcement with the tools they need to compete in that world or to function in that world. So, again, I think there's the constitutional concerns about government surveillance, infringement on rights. I understand that, and we need to deal with that appropriately. But I think to just say we're not going to have them, I think, is a disadvantage for law enforcement. And, we occasionally you'll see a bad actor in a police force. We don't do away with the police force. I think same with ICE. You know, occasionally you may see a bad actor in ICE, but we don't do away with that program. We have to put the guardrails in and make sure there's accountability. So, again, I think there's some pragmatic discussions to be had and some solutions we can find.
Joined by State Representative Danny Garrett here on the program. And I was talking to one of your colleagues earlier in the show about this, but it's kind of an extension of the whole discussion about flock cameras and data centers. But just maybe it was kind of comes out of COVID, just a general distrust of these elite institutions, and that includes state government, I would think, and trying to restore that trust, because, you know, maybe at one time people would have looked at flock cameras and said, hey, if this is going to make me safer in my community, I'm not going to raise a big fuss about this. You're always going to have some chronic malcontents out there. But the difference here this time around, it does seem like, well, you are trying to do this during COVID, or you were trying to do this during, you know, XYZ, whatever. And to me, like, restoring trust in government, and maybe it's not even because of what goes on at the state level, it goes on at the federal level, but, you know, people in their minds is all sort of one entity. It's going to take, like, restoring that trust in some way.
I agree. And in this flock camera discussion, yeah, we haven't met to discuss this as a legislature, but I go to church on Sundays and I hear from a lot of people, and I have a lot of people who came up and said, you know, look, those things are helpful to us. So they make us feel secure. We like those. Then you find the others who really you have. I think that the distrust of government is obviously a concern and something that we need to be aware of as we deal with these issues. But I don't think they represent everybody, at least not the people that approach me.
Something else, and you've been very active in this arena, the divisive concepts law, mm-hmm. and you see it from time to time, you know, something will kind of crop up out of nowhere. And I think these agencies are trying their best to adhere to the spirit of the law, at least, but there's still a lot of things, and you see it on a daily basis, where you thought this divisive concepts law, at least as it pertains to education, would have solved a lot of these issues, but we're still seeing them. Is that something that needs to be tweaked? Is it a penalty thing? Or because my understanding of that law is, okay, you better follow the law or you face funding cuts, and you know, but you could cut their funding anyway, even without the law. It's just that a lot of these schools, 4-year schools, K-12, whatever, are kind of going into this kicking and screaming.
Well, I'll say I listened to your show on Friday in anticipation of maybe having this discussion today, and I heard a lot of the comments made. So I've a couple points I want to make is, one, I think from where we started several years ago, we've come very, very far. I mean, just for one example, University of Alabama eliminated 300 programs that were in violation of the DEI law. Now that begs the question, how did we ever get to the point they had 300 programs that were doing, going down that road? That has to do, I think, with the total abdication of what was going on in academia to the woke agenda. And I think we've been trying to correct that. So we're trying to turn a barge in some respects, but I will say that every university president, save for a couple that we've spoken with, Chairman Orr and I've talked with, and others in the legislature have talked with, have been on board with this, and they've done things. You know, we've eliminated those departments. You won't find safe spaces on campuses. You've already seen changes in course catalogs and free speech events and all of that. In the middle of all this backdrop, we've had a lot of lawsuits. And to my knowledge, every lawsuit that's been filed against the law has been ruled in favor of upholding the law. We've seen personnel changes in universities, and there'll be some more changes. We've seen structural changes. We had the University of Alabama come to us asking us if we could eliminate the requirement they have a school of social work. They haven't eliminated the school of social work yet. I'm not sure they will. They may or may not, but they've made changes in that program. And so I think there's a lot of discussions we have. Every time I hear about one of these things where there's a violation, we investigate. But another thing we did last session that you didn't talk about on Friday was the bill that Representative Stubbs carried, which was basically gutted, if you will, the ability of faculty senate to control what's going on in the institutions. It puts the curriculum, the responsibility for curriculum and course study at the boards of trustees and the administration, makes the faculty senate's advisory only if they exist. And it also requires a tenure review policy at each institution. And about 3 weeks ago, we had about 30 of the of board members and college presidents came to Montgomery, met with the speaker, Representative Stubbs, and I to discuss this bill because it takes effect October 1. And already we've seen Auburn and Jacksonville State disband their faculty senates. University of Alabama passed on Friday a resolution that clarified that faculty senates do not speak to the university. They are only advisory, and the role is only advisory. And they also set up, as these other institutions are setting up, policies for tenure review. And tenure review policy means a professor who doesn't measure up can lose their tenure or can be terminated. So what I'm saying is the urgency we have to see to have this addressed is important. We've seen we had a statement out this morning about a problem with the Department of Early Childhood. I spoke to the governor's office this morning. A lot of the appointments made to the boards we saw this with the library board, with other appointments – are made by conservative people, and yet sometimes these boards go awry. And I think part of that is being these board members are taking advice of national organizations that you can't trust anymore. So I think we passed a law last session that allows the appointing authority to recall a person they appointed if they're not doing the job that they were appointed to do. So I guess what I'm saying to you is that this is an urgent issue to the legislature. It's important. We have a lot of ways we're addressing it, and we're going to continue to address it. Chairman Orr and I are talking about outcome-based funding for the higher ed universities, and part of that bill will have the same requirement. If you're not in compliance with the law, then you would not have the opportunity to participate in that type of funding. So we're not seeing a lot of resistance at the administration level or the board of trustee level. Yes, at the faculty level we are. And that's something we're going to have to deal with and work through. But it's important to the legislature, and we continue to see it through.
Well, and one last question before we get you out of here on that, then that seems to be the rub. A lot of these administrations are trying to be very delicate with the faculty, and maybe they have their reasons, and you don't want to revolt from within. And then, but to me, that part of the calculus, maybe it shouldn't matter as much, but, kind of a peek behind the curtain here. When you talk to these guys at these schools and their spokesmen, they will say, Hey, give us more time, give us more time, give us more time. And then, the sense of urgency doesn't necessarily seem to be with the member institutions.
Well, I think that's why we passed this bill that we're dealing with faculty senates and the tenure that takes effect October 1. By October 1, and we told this group that met with us a few weeks ago, we expect every university to have those policies in place by October 1. I guess what I'm saying is we're seeing good reception from the administration and the trustees around the state. But to your point about urgency, that was just another way that we're reinforcing how we want this to be addressed. And they're going to continue to be things that pop up. And I'll just tell you that in the academic world, I bet you 90% of the faculty is left, and very far left. Many of them far left. And we've got to work through that. So this is a start. This is one way we're doing it. We're cleaning it up what we can with the curriculum and whatnot. Now a lot of administrations had just abdicated kind of too much to the faculty senate. It's clear in the law now that they can't do that. That any issue is responsibility, and the person accountable will be the trustees and the administration. And I think that's all positive. And again, that law will take effect October 1, but they're already changing their policies prior to that.
Herzog, we got to get out of here. We're out of time, but thanks for hopping on this morning.
Sure. Thank you.
Danny Garrett, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a timeout in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Laughing at the late night show. I don't know what's wrong with me, because I know I need my rest. But if I don't stay up all night, sleep all day, I ain't at my best. Hey! Yes, we are beer drinkers. Yes, we are hell raisers.